Hello and welcome to a sporting discussion talking sports of all sorts. We are back after a bit of a layoff, and there's a story to that, and I'll explain that in a minute. But my name's AJ Mithen, and I'm joined by the wonderful co-host, Andrew Johnson. Andrew, welcome.
Sports of all sorts, injuries of all sorts, AJ. Oh, dearie me. Throughout both of our sporting lives, we've hurt most parts of our bodies. I've torn muscles up and down the body. I haven't quite gone to the same extreme as you in terms of my knee issues. Thankfully, my major one was a grade one tear to the medial in the left knee and a grade two tear to the medial in the right knee. It just happened to be in the same incident.
Same time, that's right.
Yeah, when I did the splits on a football field. And doing that, thankfully, stopped me from going one way completely and rupturing. But you've, over the journey, done some bad knee injuries. You've done your collarbone really properly. And what's the one thing that neither of us had ever done before?
Yeah, I've got a long and distinguished career of hurting myself really badly. I do not mess around. And lately, it was a high grade, meaning grade three, ruptured Achilles tendon.
Woo!
Yes.
Oh, dearie me. Initially, you thought it was a calf?
I thought I'd done a calf because I'm old and I'm hefty and I do calves, you know, going to the fridge. So I was playing baseball and I was trying to run to first base and I figured that I had pulled my calf quite badly. And then it started to hurt a bit more and I thought, oh, no, I've done this calf really, really badly. And then scans after a couple of days said that I had a diabolical, really, really bad rupture, and I had it surgically repaired, and it is now 6.5-7 weeks post-surgery, and my achievement is that I can literally stand up on 2 feet.
Woo!
In a moon boot. It's hands down, having dined at the buffet of many serious sporting injuries, Andrew, this one is the worst of them all for recovery. It wasn't the one that hurt the most. It wasn't the one that, had the biggest impact or anything like that, but he's the worst for recovery and not being able to do anything and being absolutely useless in trying to help.
So you hear about people doing their Achilles and you see people and they say, oh, it's like someone's kicked you in the back of your leg. And so the one that I recall the most was Hawthorn footballer Jared Ruffhead when he did his. I can still remember he was running along and he just pulled up as if he had done a hammy, so that real sort of short step, and then turned around to look behind him because he thought that someone had just kicked him. And then when he realized that they hadn't, he went, oh, so he sat down, just put his hand up and went, I'm in a bit of strife here. So
yesterday,
it doesn't seem. There you go.
Yeah, yesterday, all of the talk is about, there's a big noise and you feel like you've been shot and blah, 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 blah. And I was swinging at a pitch and connected and was letting go of the bat to run to first base. And I thought I'd let the bat go and it had hit me on the back of the leg on the follow through. And then I was like, oh, no, that's much worse than that. And then didn't even make it to first base. Cost us the game in the end, but, you know.
There are a lot of other incidents in the game that you can look back on.
Apart from the one definitive one that stopped the winning run score, which was me getting out at first base. But anyway, yesterday, it's funny we're talking about this. There's a former, he's a free agent now, so we can't say former, free agent running back Tariq Cohen, who used to play for the Chicago Bears, was broadcasting a workout of his live on Instagram. And we'll put the link to this in the show notes. And he blew his Achilles during that live broadcast. And I didn't hear a sound when I did mine because there was clay going everywhere and, you know, lots of movement and feet and cleats on the ground and all that sort of stuff. But the sound that his leg makes, you can hear it pop. It's like someone hitting a squash ball against the wall. It's just brutal, brutal, brutal.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that's why when they say when you do your Achilles, basically your calf muscles roll up like a curtain, like a blind, because I don't think that's the biological way it does it, but something happens in your leg where it basically what has been Vroom. There goes. Yeah.
Yes.
Brutal. Our sporting discussions, very own Aaron Delahunty did her Achilles just over a year ago playing netball. She had the bugger of a rehab and all that as well, but she's back playing now, which is inspirational. And a sporting discussion's own concussion specialist, Dr. Alan Pierce, he's also done his Achilles and had it reattached and has an absolutely brutal scar on the back of his leg. So it happens more often than you think. And everyone's, you know, war stories come out when people see you in the boot or the crutches or the sick scooter. I had the knee scooter. That was one of the best things ever. And people would say, oh yeah, I've done my Achilles. Oh, yeah, I had it reattached. Here's the scar. You know, there's like a 20-centimeter, 30-centimeter scar on the back of your leg. Heaps of people have done it.
You are the sixth person that I know who has done their Achilles.
Mm. The best part was the surgeon. My surgeon, when he came to see me the next day, he said, oh, yeah, because, you know, we've played a lot of sport and done a lot of stupid running around and jumping and things like that. And he came in and said, yeah, the tendon was actually quite worn out and it's a miracle that it hadn't gone earlier. And I'm like, oh, well, okay. And then he said, yeah, there was lots of little, like, nicks and strains. And he said there was barely a grain in the tendon. And I thought, that doesn't sound good.
No, so you had done like minor, like sort of little tears.
Little ones around the journey. And then the big one went bang and he said, yeah, I had to clean up a fair bit on that tendon. And I was like, oh, geez. All right.
Yeah, right.
As long as I think it's okay, you know. Like I said, I can stand up. Still hurts when I, well, not hurt, but you still feel it. It's such a weird sensation just feeling it stretching.
Oh.
Because my foot's been locked in 30-degree angle for 5 weeks and now it's flat and you can just feel it stretching. Anyway.
Yes.
Enough about me.
that's your injury. There's been some injuries in the sporting world. Obviously that happens regularly. I was just watching a clip of Mason Cox from the Collingwood Football Club talk about his eye injury and the fact that he's wearing glasses, so sunglasses or goggles now when he plays and why he's doing that. And you saying that your Achilles had already had some nicks in it reminded me that what he was saying is he had an opponent, their finger go into his eye and essentially detach his retina in one of his eyes. And he had to go straight to hospital for that. But when they were in, they looked at his other eye and the doctor said, oh, you also have a detached retina in your other eye, in your good eye. Lord. And he's like, sorry, what? Mm. Yeah. And so he doesn't know how long that had been there. And a detached retina is not an impact injury. It's not always like that. My mum had one where
you can do it when you sneeze.
Yeah, yeah. Mum was just like, oh, my vision's gone a bit blurry in one of my eyes. What's up? And it was detached retina. So he's saying that the goggles that he wears are twofold. One is to stop the sun or the brightness, the light coming through into his eye and just to deaden that a little bit. But the second one is if he gets a poke in his eye, he will most likely go blind. So there is a reason.
Contact sport where people are trying to punch around your head is the best place for him to be then.
Yes, yes. But if the glasses can prevent that from happening, then wonderful. But and then you read all the knickknacks going, oh, look at him with the goggles.
I think it looks cool. Many famous athletes have played with goggles on. Edgar Davids, who was a famous footballer, played for Ajax and the Netherlands. Clarence Seedorf as well, who played for Real Madrid and Inter Milan, I think it was. AC Milan. AC Milan, sorry, they'll kill me if I get that wrong. Horace Grant in the NBA, yeah. James Worthy in the NBA. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, one of the greatest players in basketball history, wore glasses, wore goggles on the court.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
it's not a rarity, and the fact that he's doing something to prevent potential catastrophic injury is wonderful.
No, so, soft, mate.
Oh, what are you wearing the goggles for, mate?
Trying to protect yourself from blindness is soft, mate.
Yeah.
Well, so, yeah, I love that. What are you trying to protect yourself from blindness for? That was a good one.
Yeah. and then sticking with the you talked about fists flying around heads, and Paddy McCartan has made a comeback from several concussions. He's playing Aussie Rules for the Sydney Swans. He played in the VFL last year. His interview, I think, 2 or 3 years ago on Triple M was just harrowing. Listening to him talk about the impact that his concussions had on him, how he couldn't go out of the house. He needed to be in darkness. He referred to himself as a shell of a human. And it was sad. But then he got drafted, and I don't know what the medical process is to clear him and what the contracts say about if he gets another concussion and what the impacts might be, who's at fault, but for
what sort of how fraught is that, trying to knock up a contract for someone with such a history of concussion, because you've got duty of care responsibilities versus performance on field responsibilities versus everything else. Yes,
and it's really hard to say to someone you are not allowed to do this thing that is your profession and that is your best way of making money to set yourself up for your life. But as someone who doesn't have to make that decision and isn't involved in any discussions with him, I have no idea how he was cleared to play football.
Yeah. Well, I'd also throw we've spoken about Will Pukowski, the cricketer, quite a lot, and he has also been cleared to go back to playing cricket again, and he played towards the end of the domestic Australian season. And there was a report that came out from someone saying that they thought that he had had 10 concussions, but they said, oh, maybe it wasn't a concussion. It was just like his body remembering what a concussion felt like, or words to that effect, which is just – anyway, people will say whatever they want to get someone back onto a field, won't they?
They will. They will. Mm. And the most recent – and this is not necessarily in the sporting or in the pursuit of the sport, but it was in the Post – in the Giro d'Italia cycling competition.
Oh, that was mad, yeah.
The first Black African to win a stage at a Grand Tour, Biniam Girma, won the sprint to the line, the 10th stage of the Giro, happy days. He then did everyone did the traditional celebration of shaking up the champagne bottles and popping the cork, and the cork went straight into his eye. And he was, what was it? The medical test revealed a hemorrhage in his eye, and the team doctor said it was strongly recommended he avoid physical activity. Good Lord. He's just won himself a stage and
in one of the most grueling cycling contests out there.
Yep. Yeah. And see you, mate. So that's just unlucky. That is so unlucky.
But plus, rookie mistake. Who puts their head over a bottle of grog while they're trying to open it?
Well, it's something that's come up a little bit of late, and I want to ask the question: are we past the point of spraying champagne, sparkling, whatever, after winning an event?
I have an answer for you. We will be past that when a different company pays more money to have their product there.
Mm. True.
Considering there has been many, many thousands of bottles of champagne sprayed over the year, and from what I could find out, this is the only eye-related injury to a first-place finisher.
Yes, but what I was going to sort of get to is it's happened in cricket in the certainly in the English cricket team, and it happened in the Tasmania or the Hobart Ashes test, having Muslim players essentially running away from the presentation stage as their teammates start to spray alcohol. Now, I was thinking there that they would be a really good opportunity for someone just to create a product, which is probably like soda water in the same pressurized manner. So you can pop it and you can still get the shake and everything, because people aren't doing it.
Team branded soda streams, you reckon? I think that can work. Actually, yeah, absolutely. No one ever drinks it. Well, they only drink it. They spray it, then they swig it, then they switch to the sponsor's product, their sponsor's product.
Yes, yeah. So I was at the, I think I was at the Junction Oval. It was the women's 50 over, was it the women's 50 over World Cup final, I think, and not a bottle in sight, just celebration without that, streamers and people being happy and celebrating. It was when the English cricket team did it, and it was Adil Rashid and Moeen Ali. This would have been 6 years ago, I think, maybe more, where there's a photo of them on the balcony at one of the cricket grounds, and they are both like cowering in the corner because there was nowhere for them to run. It wasn't like Usman Khawaja where he could go anywhere on the field and get away. But they were just going, oh, God, get this away from me. So I wonder if that sort of thing is going to not necessarily the popping in the eye, but that just reminded me the cultural issues. And also, like, do we start to think about the implications of alcohol sponsorship? Tobacco sponsorship has been banned for a long time.
You are going down a way different
path. I know.
Here. I like that you've taken a guy thumping a bottle of champagne into his eye to getting rid of alcohol sponsorship altogether. I think that's
a nice segue. It's just questioning.
We're going to move on. You are with The Sporting Discussion with AJ Mithen and Andrew Donaldson. Don't forget, if you're on social media, you can get us on facebook.com/asportingdiscussion. Or if you're a Twitter who tweets, go to @ASD_radio. And if you like websites, go try asportingdiscussion.com.au. Moving on, Andrew, the weekend just gone. The NRL, the National Rugby League, have completed their round 10, otherwise known as Magic Round, because every single game played in the one location, that is Brisbane Suncorp Stadium. Now, before the weekend, there was some hand-wringing and panic merchanting and shaking fists at young people because it was scheduled to rain in Brisbane. And so there were a few pieces around it. Why are they playing all the same games in the same spot when it's going to rain? Everyone's going to get injured and the games will be bad quality and the ground's going to churn up. Well, they did play 8 games. It barreled down rain on Saturday night. It barely rained on Friday night. It didn't rain on Sunday at all. No players were injured due to a wet or shifting surface. And as the NRL physio Brian Sini says, it's actually better for contact sports to be played on a softer grass surface rather than a hard, firm one, because that has a little bit more give for lower bodies.
Right.
So there were no major injuries caused by the surface. The surface held up fine. The NRL gives Suncorp Stadium the week off, so there's no games in Brisbane this weekend. And everyone had a good time, unfortunately, for some naysayers. I like the idea, Andrew. What do you reckon about it? I remember Super Rugby did it in Melbourne about a month ago as well. It was supposed to be in New Zealand, but COVID meant it was in Melbourne. Only about 2 people and a dog showed up, but that's rugby union right now.
Yeah, I have looking out my window, there's a wall where there are posters put up for gigs and various things. And sometime between midday on Thursday and midday on Friday of the weekend, the 2 days preceding the Super Rugby Magic Round, posters went up advertising the Magic Round. So people literally had 36 hours to look at that and go, oh, that might be something I want to get along to. Now, there's quite a large Pacific Nations population in in Melbourne, and Moana Pacifica and the Fijian Drua would be a big draw card in Super Rugby. And I don't know, I don't have the crowd figures in front of me, but I just think that the advertising for that was quite poor, particularly when Magic Round in the NRL has been around for quite a number of years, and it is always referenced in the when the the fixtures released.
It's the feature of
during
the year.
The preseason, during the game. Everyone knows that there is this game. Now, you talked about the rain and the conditions and everything. Grounds these days, particularly the major grounds, the drainage there is such that they're brilliant. They recover really well. It's not an issue. I love it. I really think that it should be done in many more sports. I would love to see.
Well, the NRL stole it off the UK Super League, Rugby League over there comp.
Okay.
Where they do it to... They desperately need to do it there to drum up interest in the game, but they do it here because it's a big moneymaker. Todd Greenberg, who was the former CEO, introduced it 3 years ago, and it's been a smash hit every time apart, you know, COVID unpermitting, if that's the word, but accepted. That's what I was trying to say. COVID accepted. Magic Round's an absolute smash hit, and a lot of other sports, like you say, are looking at it going, how come we can do that? It would work really well for the AFL in somewhere like Melbourne or Perth or something like that, because there's a lot less wear and tear on the ground in an AFL game. And there's many different venues where they could play if they have concerns, because the AFL does have one extra fixture. It could never work in overseas comps like Premier League or anything like that, but they get around it by having things where, like, they in the final round of the season, every game starts at the same time and all those sorts of things. That's kind of that. Technically, that's to avoid corrupt activities, but or collusion between teams. But that also works as a spectacle as well.
It does. I really like that. As in the last round of Premier League, how they have all the games at the same time. I'm thinking if you wanted to, there's double headers that happen in. So I'm thinking the WBBL have had double headers for the last 3 or 4 years, which are always good to go to, and they've probably. COVID is the reason, but they've had a lot of games. All right, we're in Adelaide for these 3 days, and there are doubleheader here, doubleheader there, doubleheader there. All right, now we're going to pick up and move to New South Wales or wherever it may be. The Matador Cup, which was the men's 50-over competition, that moved to all being in New South Wales a couple of years ago when that was still a thing, and played a lot at North Sydney Oval, which has that little carnival atmosphere. I would think that Super Netball is right in the right wheelhouse for it, because 4 games, you could do it on Friday and Saturday. You could actually go 1 Friday, 2 Saturday, 1 Sunday, 2 Friday, 2 Saturday, 1 Friday, 3 Saturday. You could, I think it'd be a brilliant thing, and that's the timing nature of that. No, it's the sport is not as long as an AFL game, for example.
Well, the NBL
or
tried
a cricket
that
game.
NBL tried that mid-season tournament. Remember, I'm trying to remember what it was called. I think it was just called the NBL Cup, which was hosted exclusively in Melbourne, and every team came to Melbourne for like a 2-week period, I think it was, and the games were played as a tournament inside the season, but they also counted towards season results. And there's now that the NBA over in the States are trying to figure out a similar sort of situation there, because they having hubs or having the one location saves costs in the end, even though it may seem counterintuitive because everyone has to fly there. But you save money. The broadcaster has all their gear there in the one spot. And one thing that was very noticeable about the NRL one was that the broadcast standards and things that they tried and things like that, they were all able to do it because all of their kit was in one location, and it was a special event rather than, you know, trying to spread 4 HD cameras across 6 venues at different time frames and things like that. I quite like the idea. I like the idea. I think it's really good. And the games were good quality too, and all the sooks just have to kind of cop it that everyone had a nice time and it all went well.
Everyone did have a nice time. I think one of the things which came up was a fight amongst the crowd on the first game. Now, I didn't see footage of that until Sunday. I heard about it, and from what I heard, what I could piece together was that a fight spilled out onto the ground and there was a huge number of spectators involved in an all-in brawl.
Yeah, you'd think that, wouldn't you?
That's not what actually happened. Now, it was shit house and dickheads shouldn't be punching people, but it's something that happens, and again, this won't excuse it, it's something that does happen across all codes.
Yeah.
And it's fucking horrible.
It's a huge societal problem where dickheads feel they can get a skinful and just swing away.
Yeah.
And like you said, this one at the NRL, not to talk it down, but you would think that, yeah, you would think it was batons and trolley poles and people laying into each other. It was six pissed dickheads falling over each other and just swinging away in the seat.
I have massive issues with how long it took security to get there.
Yeah. If someone can film a 2-minute fight without any sign of security, even like meekly going, oh, come on, guys, you know, but yeah. Normally the cops would be into that. If that was an A-League game, and one person stood up too quickly, they would have been kicked out of that stadium by one of about 400 cops and security guards that they have there. But I wrote about this in my Raw column too, but I've seen worse fights than that at local football, at AFL games, at the cricket. I've seen an absolutely horrific fight at the cricket where a guy got cut open really badly with a bit of glass. But we don't have time for today to delve into the whole cultural thing about why there are 300 cops at the soccer and like 12 at the cricket, but and larrikins versus rioters and hoodlums and things like that. But it did colour the Magic Round, unfortunately, because of what you said, that it was, and again, I'm not talking it down. There was a fight and it was a bunch of dickheads and they wrecked their day and everyone's day around them. But you would thought, like you said, that, it was like an entire section were brawling with each other.
Yeah, and look, I like that there is a focus on this. And actually, and I think we may have got a question about this saying, is there more fan fighting, more fan violence, or is it just recorded more? I think it's just recorded.
That came from Dan Jarvis over Twitter at ASD_radio in the context of the lack of crowds attending AFL games. Who's to blame? Is it an increase in crowd violence, or is it there's just more available vision of it? Now, he's talking about the violence there. I don't think people aren't going to games because they're scared of the violence. I think they're just not going to games because they don't need to anymore. COVID has meant it's much easier to watch stuff on the couch and people got accustomed to it.
Yeah, so people have gotten used to it. And also the way that people's membership cards work now, it's all app-based or predominantly app-based rather than swiping your card. So the majority of membership cards for AFL teams are just souvenir cards and you need to go into the app. And adding extra steps always is a barrier for some people. Now, is that the reason for everyone? No, but there are some people that won't go because they can't figure out how, they don't want to figure out how. And as you said, the last couple of years have meant that people can just sit on the couch and watch, and they've become accustomed to that. They've become comfortable with that. Instead of their normal Saturday being, I'm going to meet mum, dad and the sisters at the train station at 12:30. We're going to go and get a burger beforehand, and then we're going to go home and have toasted cheese sandwiches at the folks' place. Now it's, everyone just come around to my place. I'll get hot dogs, and instead of paying $8 for a hot dog, it'll be $8 for 12 hot dogs.
And you can buy 24 beers for $40 rather than 4 beers for $42, you know.
Yeah.
For mid-strength beers. One of the things about Magic Round, Andrew, was the scheduling. And the centrepiece of the weekend was the Saturday night game, which was Melbourne versus Penrith. Now, they played each other in the grand final in 2020, played each other in a preliminary final in 2021. Penrith are the reigning premiers, so naturally the biggest game of the round was scheduled for that time. Unfortunately, it was a bit cruel by Melbourne having a whole bunch of injuries and also taking a little bit of the piss, so they didn't show their hand too early. But what it did show is that Penrith are head and shoulders the best team in the NRL, And we've got Melbourne, the reigning premiers in the AFL, who are 9 wins and 0 losses. And I don't think I've ever seen a team sleepwalk through a season like I'm seeing them sleepwalking through a season. We had a comment on Facebook.com from Carolyn saying, the Demons are dead set flying. Can either of us, Andrew, foresee a September upset where the wheels fall off, like the Tigers a few years ago with Mason Cox, or Geelong 2008, or Buster Douglas over Iron Mike? He says he smells an upset brewing. Do you? I don't. I think they are just doing all they need to do to finish top four, and then they will actually switch on.
Do I think an upset can happen? Yes.
Of course.
Do I think an upset? But I think an upset will happen? No.
Absolutely not.
I think Melbourne, they are an excellent football team. They had one of their key defenders last year go down with a knee injury, Adam Tomlinson. So they brought in another one and it was fine. Harrison Petty, he was a younger player, but he just slotted in and did what's needed. And they're fine. They've got minimal injuries at the moment. That's the one thing that could cruel them. But I don't see it. Do I want it to happen? Absolutely.
That's the chaos. That's the fun.
An underdog. Yeah. Yep. I'd love them to go through the season undefeated and then lose somehow in a preliminary final. Well, I think that would be, for me, amazing. Chaos. Yeah. So I just want to go back to the NRL situation, because I've got the ladder up in front of me, and Penrith are on top, Melbourne are a second. Mm. Whoever won that game on the weekend would have had 9 wins, the other one would have had 8 wins, and that'd be a game ahead
from
of third,
10 games.
Two
from 10 games.
Yep. From 10 games. The points differential in the NRL, there are only three teams that have a points differential of above 100. North Queensland in third with 126. Penrith on top, 174. Melbourne second, 199. All the others are 53 and below. So it's not just that they're winning, it's that they are thumping the opposition. Like Melbourne are thumping the opposition every week. Melbourne are doing what's needed. But these guys, they're just going, it's an average of 17 to 20 points a week more than the opposition.
Yeah, which is the opposite end, isn't it? From the good teams, you have bad teams. And unfortunately, in the NRL and the AFL and the Big Bash this season too, just for want of putting it in there, the bad teams are just getting worse and worse. In the NRL, there are teams that are just diabolical and will be lucky to finish bottom six, instead of bottom two or three. In any other year, they probably would finish bottom two or three, but everyone else around them is just so bad that the finals are, like you said, points differential. The differential between, I think, is something like eighth and ninth. There's the one premiership game behind, which is two premiership points, but the points differential is something like 60, which is another two or three games even worth of points. So does it affect crowds and all that sort of stuff? I don't think that much. The NRL's crowds are pretty steady all the way through. The AFL, it can affect a little bit more, because bad teams like North Melbourne are just getting belted every week. The game's over after about 15 minutes, and no one wants to see that.
No, and I think the larger the stadium is, the more a poor crowd is exacerbated. So I've been to a couple of games this year where the crowd has been 35,000 to 40,000 people. That's a great crowd. It looks empty. Because the MCG holds 100,000 people, it just looks quite sparse. Mm. And if you've got a stadium that only holds 20,000 and you've got 12,000 there, well, that's not too bad. But 12,000 is a poor crowd. So I think it's all a bit sort of relative to the size of the stadium and how many people you normally get. But there's definitely less people going. And look, as the season wears on, as the weather gets colder and as the bad teams get worse, they're going to have less people going to watch them. Now, you're always going to get bad teams. You're always going to get bad games.
If you think crowds are bad now, Dan Jarvis, if you think crowds are bad now, when that all kicks in, they're only going one way.
Oh, yeah. And it's. I wanted to also mention you talked about the NRL where there are a number of bad teams, and then the AFL where there's a couple and there could be more throughout. The Super Netball is an interesting one this season. The Vixens, Melbourne and the West Coast Fever are head and shoulders above the remainder of the teams. And that's probably only been the last 3 to 4 weeks. There's been 10 rounds. Three games ago, Melbourne Vixens and Queensland Firebirds were second and third, and they were on the same number of wins. Three rounds later, Vixens had one more win. Three rounds later, Vixens have four more wins than the Firebirds. The Firebirds have lost three in a row. Vixens have won all four. They're top of the pops. But the bottom-placed Sunshine Coast Lightning are only two games out of finals. They're only two games away from third, even. And that there's a difference there, I think, between having a couple of teams that are so much better than everyone else. That happens. It's what the rest of the ladder looks like and how competitive those matches are and can be. And
Well, the Lightning are, like you said, 2-3 out of the final, but their form has not been good.
No. They've not been as dominant as they have in previous years.
Which is fair enough. You can't expect everyone to dominate all the time, but
if you
were dominant, you would at least transfer to good rather than just garbage.
Yeah, sure. But I think it's a good sign that the remainder, the non-dominant teams, are not complete trash, because it means that there is interest in every game and even the games between those two top teams and the bottom side. So I don't want to watch Melbourne play West Coast. I don't want to watch Melbourne Storm play West Tigers. It's a horrible, horrible
experience. Then? We've had a question from Jane Croxton, pardon me, Jane, asking about, what would you do if your team was so bad that they're not really worth watching? Pardon me, I've read that really awkwardly. And I guess we can talk about North Melbourne here. If you're a North Melbourne fan, why would you bother going, apart from love of the club and all that sort of thing? But one other thing I wanted to throw at you for this one, Andrew, over in Major League Baseball, we have the Cincinnati Reds. And out of the course of a 162-game season, right now there are 30-odd games in there, and Cincinnati are they? They've won something like 9 games out of 30. And
it's not great.
Before the season, fans saw this coming, and they said, look, what is the owner going to do? What are the coaches not going to do to try and make this team better? And the owner, whose name I forget, sorry, I didn't look it up because the question just came through, was, what are the fans going to do about it? You know, what are you going to do about it? We're the only team here, so you're going to come and watch us anyway.
Right.
Basically, he said you're going to come and watch us anyway. So just further to Jane's question, how do you react to, A, your team being so bad that it's really not worth expending the effort to watch them, because there's very little silver linings to be got, and how would you react if you were a Cincinnati Reds fan?
I'd still buy my membership and still go, but that's because I did that. Like when Hawthorn were trash for a couple of years, I'd still fly down from Canberra to Melbourne and go and watch games. And I knew a lot of people that did, but I was also at the game against Port Adelaide at the MCG, where I think some creative accounting got the crowd above 10,000. It was not good. That was, I think, the last or second last game before our coach at the time announced that he was stepping down. And it's huge. It's a huge financial burden on a team. You need to sell hope. You absolutely need to sell hope. And West Coast Eagles in the AFL are a different beast, because they've got a huge waiting list for memberships, and they'll always have strong crowds. North Melbourne have never had strong crowds. They need to sell hope. They've got some good young players, but you know what the worst part about all of that is? Their number one draft pick, Jason Horne-Francis, last week said, oh, yeah, I'm just going to put contract talks on hold. Now, he's been in the club
for five
months.
Yeah.
So poor performance begets poor performance begets poor performance, because players don't want to be there. So how do you sell hope? Don't know, but that's what you've got to do. You've got to just go, hey, look at all of our young players, and then go from there and hope that you don't have an administration that says, well, we're the only team in this town, so bugger you, you've got to support us or else there's no one else.
What are you going to do about it? Yeah. I'm always interested in how administration and the bosses at clubs that are in trouble try to bring people on board to sell that hope, because North Melbourne's coach, David Noble, isn't really – they've brought him there specifically to work with a bad team, but he's hardly the sort of salesman to go out there and say, we're all on track, you know, even though we lost by 120 points, this thing happened and it was really good, you know, because Alistair Clarkson would do that with Hawthorn.
Kevin Sheedy at GWS.
Kevin Sheedy at GWS, yeah. Mark Williams as well at Port Adelaide as they were coming through. So it was, it's just interesting to me about how people react when their team is really, 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 really bad.
Yep.
Well, thank you for that question.
I want to sort of pivot from a team being really, really bad to a player being really, really good. And this is a question that's come through about, should Lauren Jackson be selected for Australia's World Cup basketball team in September? So she has, she's come out of retirement. 6 years she's been retired. And she has come to, we'll call it semi-professional basketball. It's the NBL 1 competition. So not the peak. It's not the WNBL. It's the next level down. She's representing Albury Wodonga. Their home stadium is the Lauren Jackson Stadium. And since she's come back, she's played 4 matches. And she had 21 points and 5 rebounds in 22 minutes. 36 points and 15 rebounds in 19 minutes, 31 points and 24 rebounds in 29 minutes, 41 points and 13 rebounds in 24 minutes. She's averaging 32.25 points, 14.25 rebounds in 23.5 minutes of basketball.
And she should, just quietly, she should.
Well, yes. So she hasn't said that she's aiming to play or even that Australia would select her for the World Cup. But those performances for someone who is 6 years out of the game and just coming back and needed a medical exemption because she has medicinal marijuana for various injuries that she's got. So is it something that the Australian basketball should look to, particularly with Liz Cambage not being in the picture?
No.
Okay.
Because if she's going to play in the national team, she's going to be playing against national standard players. And she's, what did you say, 45, did you say?
No, she's 40.
40, sorry. Oh, well, that's much better. she'd probably still play better than some of her teammates, but she may struggle to match the younger, fitter US players or players from around their stronger teams. So... I hope she does. They should put her in. She should say she's available and get her in there.
Would it be worth What's having the worst her in that can happen? Squad? Would it be worth having her in the squad so that she can impart wisdom on?
Well,
on
she's the already players? Been. She's already been around the squad for a while as mentor, and she also works at the. She did work. Sorry, she's CEO of. Oh, I can't remember. Can't believe how blank I've just gone. But anyway, she has been around squads working. Yeah, she has been involved. But as a player, I don't know.
I'd love to see it, especially if she could replicate, or maybe not replicate, but go close to replicating the NBL 1 dominance that she's having. I think it would be hilarious. I've got one quick one. No, you're on mute, AJ, which people who are listening to this as a podcast can't see, but if you're going to watch it as a video, you would have seen AJ's mouth moving.
That would have been quite good. All right, I'm back.
One to ruminate on for next week is the A-League game on the weekend on, I think it was Saturday night. It had 22,000 less viewers than Clive Palmer's United Australia Party advertisement, hour-long advertisement on Channel 10 last night. On a Wednesday night, there were 22,000 more people watching a political advertisement for an hour than there were on watching the A-League. Now, that doesn't include Paramount, and I know we've had these discussions previously where a lot of people go, oh, no, A-League, watch it through some app that no one knows about and stop teasing us about not watching the game. But I'm sorry, that is a horrible, horrible metric.
It is. The ratings for the A-League have always been deplorable on free-to-air, and they didn't do themselves any favours when Channel 10 went to an ad and missed a goal between the Central Coast and Adelaide in a semi-final, mind you.
Yep.
And, yeah, so they've got a lot of work to do. We've spoken about that before, but we'll try and tee up a guest to talk about it too in the next couple of weeks. But they've got a hell of a lot of work to do, the A-League. But let's not just hang them too, because the NBL's ratings are absolutely deplorable as well. And because the interest just isn't there. The people who are interested, and getting new people to follow your sport in Australia is just brutal, a brutal business.
Yeah, I don't have the NBL figures in front of me, so I'll grab those for next week. But
well, they're so low, you can't find them. They barely cracked 10,000.
Right. That seems less than ideal.
But they are hard to find because they're so low, yes.
Okay, so let's put a pin in.
You'll fact-check my statement just then.
A-League and NBL, and I also want to talk about the England cricket coaching appointments of the last couple of weeks and what it means. So the men's team have appointed Brendan McCullum as their red ball coach and Matthew Mott as their white ball coach. So what does that mean for England, and what does that mean for Australia and the women's team where Matthew Mott has left? Particularly interested in Brendan McCullum, who I don't believe has coached a red ball team before.
No, he has not. It'd be also interesting to talk about the selection of Joe Clark for England as well. We will talk about that next time on a sporting discussion. We are not touching that at the moment, Andrew. We'll get to that next week. So thanks again, everyone, for tuning in. Good to blow out the cobwebs again after, 6.5 weeks of being on my ass and in pain and not able to do anything. So thank you, Andrew, for humouring me during that period. Don't forget, we're on facebook.com/asportingdiscussion or on Twitter at ASD_radio. This is A Sporting Discussion. I'm AJ Mith, and thanks very much, Andrew Donison.
Thank you. See ya.